Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
How are you?
I'm fine. Just I'm always running and returning, running and returning.
Well, that's a good thing, they say.
Yeah, I know. I did realize, I did look up cinnamon, and it wasn't Nissan. It was Adar, but I didn't have time to do anything with it. I was hoping to count the letters and what was the gematria, and, all the things you taught us, but I didn't have time to do that.
Well, in the Adar you have the animal is Dagim. So
The
let's
fish,
see what
okay.
the fishes and we have to go through the other all of the other connections. But that's why, why I put all of that information in the monthly blogs, so we
I
can
know,
make
but
a take a look at that.
we've been questioning it lately, especially Judy and I. So,
Good.
and I
Good
have the
evening.
incense
Good
oils,
evening.
so
So, do either of you have a question?
not right now.
Okay. We were just talking about the herbs associated with each month and the tribe involved and the animal involved, all of the things that we get out of the body part, all the things we get out of the Sefer Yetzirah, all of those connections all have information to give us. And Hannah was asking about primarily about the herbs, so
You and I talked about that during the week. This month is the Aramaic bark. It smells just about like I can't tell the difference between it and cinnamon.
really.
But we were wondering if, well, what I the question I asked was whether we should be ingesting those herbs during that particular month. By ingesting, I mean, either eating, for example, if it's cinnamon or if it's saffron. Although we use those things all the time, should that be the connection that month? And in other words, if the body part is the liver, then or whatever, body part. I think this
Then
month.
that herb will be helpful in as a protection or help to minimize the danger to that body part, the negative energy of that month of that body part.
Marcus.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I know you have a question, so why don't you go ahead?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I said, I know you have a question for tonight.
I have
So,
several questions.
all right, so start with one and we'll see where we end up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is anybody else on the line?
Yeah, Hannah and Judy are on the line.
Okay. I was studying the recording for the Good Land of Israel. The last
yes.
one you did. And
the one we did Sunday.
Actually, yes. And I wrote down many things from that. It was a great teaching, by the way. It was very enlightening. There's so much in that teaching.
that last one shook us all up, I think. I mean, the others, the whole study was, but that last one was really, every paragraph was like shock, amazement.
Really amazement, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but...
No, that's fine. I guess my first question, could you describe Adam's existence in the garden or his body and what elements it was made out of or what substance it was made out of before the sin while he was in the garden? Could you explain that to me? His covering. I know he had...
Go ahead. Tell me what you know.
Well, I'm thinking that his covering, his body was covered with like our fingernails and toenails, the substance of that. It's clear. You can see through it, and the light can penetrate through it, is what I think.
That is correct. But it's not that the light penetrated in, the light penetrated out.
Out, okay.
In other words, if you look at your fingernails, you usually I'm not counting the nail polish, but if you just look at your fingernails without any polish on them, they will look pinkish. But that's really the blood flowing through the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And because the nail itself is totally clear.
Right. Okay.
And all of his body, what we are told from the Midrashim is that all of his body was covered in that material, and that what was the essence of his soul is light. The essence of our soul is light. Now, what do we mean by light? Light is sharing. So, when the angels would look at Adam, the animals would look at Adam. They perceived him as same as God. That's what he was before the sin. He was the vessel, and the vessel literally is the Shekhinah. Literally is the female aspect of the Creator. Not the Creator, but of the endless world. The power source of the endless world, the energy source of the endless world. Because the endless world is an extension of the Creator. We can't say anything about the Creator other than He is the Creator, whatever that means. But we can't really know anything about Him. But His extension is the endless world. And the endless world is composed of light, which is fulfillment, and the vessel. And at that level... the vessel is fulfilled, so therefore it is the internal aspect of the vessel is light, and the light would shine out. And Adam is just a reflection of that in the physical world, or in the spiritual world prior, but at a lower level than the endless world.
Okay. Now, when he was cast out of the garden... He he had a different covering. Okay. And the covering, my thoughts is...
Removing requirements for offering certified through an independent...
Go ahead, Martha.
Hello? Okay, so okay, he had a different covering, and we call it a skin, where the light did not penetrate out of the body. The light was concealed, basically.
Correct.
So,
correct.
And it was the serpent that gave them doubt, and you know their ego was lifted. So the skin that was on them on outside of Garden of Eden, I take it to be somewhat of the skin of a snake. And the reason I say that is because us humans, we have like skin that flakes off, which we call dry skin or dead skin, to that extent. And our fingernails also shed the covering as well. So I'm thinking along those lines. Am I in the wrong direction here, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Because your assumption is not correct. The word for light is or, Aleph Yud Resh. The word for skin is Ayin Yud Resh. All of the Satanic Yud would transform the Hebrew letters, and that's what transform the skin. So it's not that it was the skin of a snake. It was the skin of the lower animals. That it was essentially a covering to conceal the soul. Now, the body is composed of layers. The outermost layer is the clothing that we wear. That's part of the body. Another part of the body, the next inward level, is hair. And hair is the light that comes through the skin. Then there's the level of the skin. Then there's the level of the meat. And then there's the level of fat. And then there's a level of muscles, and then there's a level of organs, and then there's a level of bones. And then there's the level of souls, which is in the blood. So I'm not sure where you have gone wrong, other than to take a step back and say, when Adam and the Chava also ate from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, they injected selfishness. They injected negativity. They injected evil into their body. And in that process, the light of their skin, the translucence of their skin, was changed from an Aleph to an Ayin. And that's what made their body opaque, so that the light of their soul could not show through, except for the finger and toenails. And that is God's mercy, giving us knowledge of what they were. Otherwise, we would have no way to understand or visualize it. So it wasn't that the snake became part of Adam and Chava, the fruit of the tree of knowledge, good and evil, became part of them. And that essence is evil. That essence is negativity. That essence is selfishness. And so our desire to receive was transformed further to the left column. And so we call that the desire to receive for oneself alone. Now, I'm not sure if that answered your question, or I've confused things, or anywhere to go from here.
No, I was just trying to understand the substance that the bodies were made of in the garden and outside the garden. So that helps tremendously.
I'm glad to help.
And I have many more questions, but if someone else wants to ask a question, because I could go all night with my questions, but I'm going to step back and let someone else ask questions.
Well, and if nobody does, step forward.
I had a question about 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't able to get with you, and you said I should ask it. I wasn't able to get to the class the last 2 weeks. And you had said I should ask it on question and answer class. And you just said something that reminded me of it because I'd forgotten. And so it sort of relates to part of how you answered Malka there. So maybe here's the time to ask it. I had said that, today cremation is very popular. And made the statement about the ruach, the nefesh being in the blood. And with the tradition to embalm people who are embalmed, what happens to the nefesh during that embalming process? Where does the ruach go? I think that was how I asked you.
I think you asked me where does the nefesh go, but
Did I say ruach?
Ruach.
I meant nefesh because it's in the blood. And I'm thinking, they've drawn the blood out. I don't know what they do with the blood. And I just wondered, what happens to that
nefesh? They discharge they burn the blood, essentially. I'm not sure if they burn it or bury it, but one of those two things is what they do. They don't use it as a fertilizer because nothing will grow from it because it's connected to the energy of death. Obviously, because the blood did die. So, that's the answer to, but the nefesh itself stays within the body parts that it's connected to. Remember, the nefesh is an outer covering for the inner level of the ruach, and then the more deeper inner level of the neshama, and ultimately the chaya and the yechidah. So the nefesh is, again, just as I discussed earlier into Malka's question, you have to understand the way the levels of the body. You start with the clothing, and then you have hair, and then you have skin, and then you have the meat, and on and on. And then you get to the level of the nefesh. So the nefesh... The neshama leaves before the body dies. The neshama leaves 30 days, they say, before the body dies. The ruach is wandering between the body, which it feels is its home, and its physical home, where all of its family is, where where all the emotions that it's expressed in its lifetime is that energy is there, and it feels comforted by that energy. So it travels between its home and the body back and forth. And the nephesh stays with the body, with the various organs and parts of the body, until that part, that component decomposes, and then that portion of the nephesh is able to elevate to its Garden of Eden.
Would it leave before the bones would deteriorate? That takes a much longer time.
You have to remember there's 248 parts of the body, so there's 248 parts of the nephesh, and there's 248 parts of the ruach, and so forth. And we always talk in terms of each, you know, the one part, but there is only one part, which is us. At the same time, there's components and levels and hierarchies. So don't become confused by the difference. You know, on a simple level, what happens to the nephesh? It stays with the body. So if the soft parts of the body, let's say the component of the pituitary gland, as an example, decomposes, then that part of the nephesh that's connected to the pituitary gland would leave. But that part of the nephesh that's connected to the bone will stay until the bone decomposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions, sir? We'll go back to Malka. Go ahead, Malka.
Okay. I've heard different descriptions of when the redemption comes, and we have. And the souls or the bodies are removed from the grave. I've heard that the body is considered is it a new body or a new body, or is it let's see what other thing that is a new beginning. Those three things I have read over several times. So how do you describe when the body comes out of the grave, then the righteous people, or is it a new A-N-E-W or a new body or a new beginning? That makes sense.
Well, I understand the question on its surface, but no, it doesn't mm-hmm. make sense, because a new body okay. is a new beginning. It just doesn't have to go through the process of growing from a child to an adult. Adam and Eve were created fully grown as a 20-year-old. That's according to the Midrash. So there was no birth in the sense that they exited a vagina in a small, being small, because physically there's no way that a full-grown man can come from a woman. Not fully grown. He has to go through the process of becoming a baby and then a toddler and then a teenager. And he grows and she grows. So, you know, so that process to adulthood is skipped for the new body. But that's even too fast. What went into the grave was a body that had aged, a body that had been damaged, whatever. The person died, and the body went into the grave, and it decomposed. And now it's time for the resurrection. The loose bone is going to grow into a new body that is exactly with the same infirmities of the old body. But immediately upon touching air, so to speak, and I use that as an example, but immediately upon arising out of the earth, it's going to, within like 30 seconds or a minute, it's going to fix all of the unhealthy aspects of itself. And now it has a new body that's a 20-year-old, or some people want to be 25, or some people want to be 30. Depends on what you want to be in your consciousness. But that new body is really the DNA of your old body. It's a new body. It's a new beginning. It's a new world. It's the world that is coming. It's the world that is Bina on Earth. So the energy, the physical laws are somewhat different. All of that's related.
Okay.
Is that clear?
And you know, I get, yes. Yes, thank you. But, you know, we get this definition from other religions. And I think you and I talked about this a couple of days ago. And they, to them, it's like they're going to be a lump of just light, not a physical body, or not a body that has arms, legs, you know, all that we have now. They think they're just going to be a lump of light, and that's it.
And we are. Because once the new body has elevated to the point where it no longer needs physicality in order to do its spiritual work, and at that point, it will return to the soul, and it will return to the skin that Adam had before the sin, and it will take this new body of light, and it will travel where it wishes. It will learn what it needs to learn. It will serve Hashem the way it needs to serve in the world of Bina, in the world that is coming. So yes,
okay.
What they're describing, we're just describing different stages in the process of returning to the endless world. Because what does our body look like in the endless world? We don't have a physical body in the endless world. We have a consciousness. We are a desire to receive. Do we have hands? No. But we have the equivalent of hands. We have a method to manifest things in that world. And so we become, we utilize whatever that world looks like, whatever our hands look like in the world. We don't need a physical body. We do need a way of manifesting something. Now, that manifestation in the endless world is probably just consciousness. We think of it, and it appears. it appears in our mind as an image, but that image is also a physical, not a physical effect, but a something that we can share potentially in the endless world. I'm being limited by the English language. I'm being limited by physical words. Because I don't remember what the endless world was like. But I'm projecting based on what is a logical approach, based on the prophecies that I've read, and the Midrashim that I've read, and my general understanding of what I've been taught. People are talking about different stages in the process.
Right.
It's not, Mashiach doesn't mean the end of the physical world. Mashiach
right.
means there will be people who are higher spiritually and will not need animal sacrifices. Because they don't need, their bodies are totally pure. And there will be people who didn't do the work sufficiently in the physical world in the first 6,000 years. And so they will need to study the Torah, and the sacrifices will be needed to be utilized by them. And there will be priests who will do those sacrifices. And then as they grow spiritually, the next process takes place. There's one of the sages that describes that there's the 7,000 years, and then there's another 1,000 years of the 8,000 years, and that's the level of Bina. And then there's the level of 9,000 years, which is the level of Chachma. And then there's 10,000 years, so the level of Keter. But we don't discuss those things other than this one sage that I know of. And most of us don't, you know, that book has never been translated. I've just had different students of Kabbalah have read parts of it to me. And so, you know, I'm just coming from that location. But there's many different ways of understanding the process. It doesn't end with Mashiach, it just changes frames. What is that next frame? It's the years of the years between 6,000 and 7,000. Well, will there be another Mashiach at 7,000? I don't know, I haven't read. But will there be another year, 1,000 years after 7,000 called the 8,000s? Yes. And that will be connected to Bina rather than, you know, we're going to be heaven on earth, but then there were going to be heaven or earth in heaven because we have to elevate back to the endless world. Well, how do we do that? You know, we can speculate about it, all about it, but does it help us in our doing our tikkun in this lifetime and this physical world? The answer is no. So Rabbi Ashlag makes reference that we shouldn't be speculating about it.
Well, I was just speculating that I am changed places with Aleph again, so that we spelled or with an Aleph again and had the light bodies
exactly.
again.
Right,
because both words are pronounced the same. They both, whether it was, I mean, that was what was fascinating to me, you know, trying to figure out what was it, fig leaves, you know, was it, what was the covering? And then when I saw the two words, and this was years ago, that both words were or, pronounced or, and one began with Aleph, like you said, and the other with Ayin. So, especially today when we found out that the letters in reverse actually brought down the rain for the flood. Well, it sounds like that the letters are still going to be moving and transforming us back to light bodies, and we'll no longer have the ore with the iron. It'll be the ore with the olive. Now, if that's speculation,
correct.
Well, I guess I shouldn't speculate, but that's what I was seeing while you were talking. I could see those letters just flying in the air, and, you know, because we receive like garments, we're told. You know, well, garment is a covering. So we go back to the endless world where we don't have the fleshly skin anymore. With skin being
correct.
The same pronunciation as it's still ore, but it's ore in a different
and
dimension.
On another level, there is no separation in the endless world. So you and I are the same consciousness. But we're different in this world. Our consciousness is different in this world. But in the endless world, they're unified. Well, what does a unified consciousness look like? Does it look like one huge human being, 100 meters tall, as one of the Midrashim expresses Adam? Or is it a circle? That is, humongous. Who knows? I don't remember being there. I don't remember, my birth. I just got told stories about my birth. But to go, what is our work to do? What is our work in this world? It's to achieve our tikkun, to correct all the mistakes that we have made, to remove bread of shame. That's what our work is. How do we remove bread of shame? Well, you earn the light, but what does that mean? You can see there's constant, always we can go deeper. There's always more levels to go through.
I'm trying to find English words, the vocabulary to fit what we really,
or,
in a way.
Or even painting a picture. Even painting a picture, because you're painting it on a canvas, which is two-dimensional. But it's really 10-dimensional.
Those letters of the Alphabet just have a big part in all of this.
Yes.
But whether or not they're the same ones that we have today, I'm not sure, but... And I say that because of your question that we all have a generation to come. To come for our generation, and
right.
And I discovered mine after you said that with the letters of my family surname.
Okay.
You know, so it's like today the letters of the alphabet are doing a lot of work and a lot of revelation. Around. You know, my family name was Abair, which is, some would say Hebert. And, of course, if you type it, spell check is going to give you the word Hebrew. And if you, Eber was also, you remember Sherman Eber.
Right. Eber is a diminutive of Abraham, actually.
Right. And it would have the same root letters as Ivrit. You know, which is Hebrew.
Right.
And I saw, okay, so my generation, Tikkun, would have been going back to Torah faith because I was virtually the first person that I know for several generations that came back to Hashem with the ultimate friends. So felt like I'm so glad you made that statement, because it just kind of, but it, there again, it was the word Ivri, the same letters and as Hebrew, and so it just meshed together to give me that answer. And so it was meant for me to convert. That was the tikkun for
that's your purpose for why you were born.
Mm-hmm.
You were to bring your soul back to Hashem.
Okay. Now that reminds me of the handout, the commentary that I sent you of the woman named Timnah, who wanted to convert, and they wouldn't allow her to convert, and so she decided to become a concubine of Esau, or Esau's son, Eliphaz. And from her generation, from her lineage, descended Amalek. And Amalek meaning doubt, and you know how we're really working towards certainty with Vaduhi and or Vadai, and it just made me think, don't we have some kind of tikkun to do for that? The idea that, I don't know, because it was a woman and because, I don't know, there's a question there, but I don't know how to form the question, and I didn't have time to, I sent you the commentary. Because I was organizing my file on women in the Bible when
I
came across.
I read the commentary, so I don't remember it all. But I had read the commentary before.
It was from the Talmud. It wasn't from, you know, the quote was from the Talmud.
Right. It's basically a midrash.
Right.
Okay, but because it's in the Talmud, people consider it on a higher level, but it really isn't. It's a midrash. It's a story about how this woman wanted to convert. She wasn't allowed to convert for whatever reason, and so she married the son of Esav, Eliphaz, and then she had relations with her. I don't remember what the exact relationship was, but it was, she had an incestuous relationship. And out of that relationship, the person Amalek was born, who formed the nation of Amalek. And all of that process to create Amalek was how the Amalek received the desire to dispute God, which is what doubt is all about. The essence of doubt is to reject God. And that's why the sages have said that it's Amalek is throughout each and every human being, because each and every human being at one time or another in their life processes will have had doubt. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
We talked about the loose bone, and
yes,
how the body will be in the resurrection time. The body will be formed from the bone, from that loose bone. So,
correct.
I got to looking and putting things or writing things down, and I wrote this. We talked about the manna in the wilderness, how it was a spiritual food from Hashem that fed the Israelites for 40 years. And it's
correct.
Called also special, the special dew, D-E-W. So is the special dew connected to the manna and the manna connected to the loose bone that is only fed spiritually in our body? We don't feed it by nourishing it with our food. So, and also manna, ma, is also connected to Moses. Moshe, right? So,
right.
And then there's this, as you talked in that study of the goodness of the land of Israel. Also, there was a 45 days that the Israelites will be in Judea mountains when the Gog Magog war, if it comes, and if not, that would be great. But that's also a 45-day indication there, too. So is all that connected to manna? And that's what they're
Manna is a physical effect of a spiritual cause. That spiritual cause is food. What is the meaning of food? What is the purpose of food? Food is a substance that carries energy. The body has been formed in order to separate energy from the food. The 45 days is a metaphor. When Mashiach comes, God forbid, but the city of Jerusalem is going to be inhabited and taken over by the Arab or the Iranians or by the Arabs. We're not depending on which of the two of them prevail. And so the Jews, to avoid the slaughter, will run into the desert and hide in the caves. The same caves where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. The Judean hills are filled with caves. And they will stay there for 45 days without any food, only scrounging for bitter herbs. It's all part of the Midrash that comes from the Zohar. Does it have to happen that way? No. But it might. It's one of the potential midrashim. It's one of the potential forecasts. So don't get confused between all the different midrashim and how they, you know, and one is one way and one is the other, and there's no possible way they both can be true, except that they're both true at different times, at different parts of the process.
Okay, can you give me an explanation of why? What's the special do? I mean, what is that?
What is the special food? It's manna.
No,
it's the man.
D-E-W. Special do. D-E-W.
It's the man.
Okay.
The Midrash says that. In the desert, they would go to sleep, and in the morning, there would be dew, which they referred to as man, mem nun, which is basically saying, what's that? And so they didn't call it dew because it was no longer liquid. It had become solid. And so the special dew is the man. That's according to one midrash. I'm sure there are others. But there are 10 levels of Torah. And we need to study all of them because they all give us information that helps us understand the other levels. Can you understand the five books of Moses without the books of prophets? Without the Psalms? Can you understand the book of Esther without the Chronicles? The answer is no. They're all interrelated.
Okay. I have another question. As y'all were speaking a few minutes ago about the incest relationship with Timna.
Yes.
Okay. That reminds me of Lot and his daughters, his two daughters.
Right.
Now, okay. The oldest daughter named her son from my father, I think. Was that the forerunner for the Mashiach? Because her conscience was that she thought the whole world was destroyed and it was only them left in the world.
Correct.
Conscience was that she wanted to continue, you know, Hashem's,
the human race. Right. She wanted to continue to serve Hashem and start the world over. So
she
thought it had been destroyed. The whole world had been destroyed. So, yes, the Mashiach comes from her through...
Ruth.
Well, mm-hmm. Ruth is one lineage, and Peretz is... Lot's daughter is another lineage, because you need the two sides. So don't get them confused, but, you know, then Ruth becomes the great-grandmother or the great-great-grandmother to King David. And then King David is the progenitor of the Mashiach. That's why it's Mashiach ben David. And then you have the spark of Moses that's also in the spark of Mashiach. So you have all of these different influences, soul parts coming together in one human being.
And talking about David, why was he supposed to be born? Why was he supposed to be stillborn? But he wasn't because Adam gave
him years of right. As the chariot to Malchut has no light of its own. Therefore, David could not be alive.
Okay. I have other questions. Does somebody else have questions? I don't want to take up the whole time.
We're close to the hour up anyway, so why don't you ask another one and then we'll call it a night.
And this one can wait. I haven't, just maybe some comments, but, you know, I'll ask this one. You asked, no one's asked me what Kabbalah awareness was, to get which class that was. I guess it was this one that we're talking about. And I'll ask that question next week. But my comments and about Jaffa Sea and how the treasures will be brought up, out of the Jaffa Sea, and so will the treasures of the desert come in as well at the end of the Gog Magog war to help the souls that are left after that war. I think that's a beautiful thing. you know, I didn't think about, like, all the shipwrecks, you know, that are in the sea. You know, there were shipwrecked for a purpose. And is this the purpose for all of that destruction on the seas and in the desert?
Absolutely. You have to remember, there's a spiritual law. If it happens in the physical world, it's part of the plan of creation. So did the shipwreck have to happen? No. But since it happened, the resources are not going to be lost. They're going to be part of the messianic times. And those things are going to roll through underwater to reach the port of Jaffa.
I think that's just amazing. Just amazing.
And Jaffa means beautiful. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we were supposed to talk about herbs, but I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, we did.
We did talk about it before you got here.
Okay.
We talked about it in the earlier class tonight in the Noah class. We talked about it, and we also completed it. Or, you know, it's never completed. I'm sure there'll be more questions about herbs over time anyway. But we did complete it for tonight.
I have one more question, which is pertaining to the same study. You said in the lesson that good is the extraction from the waste. What exactly does that mean?
Good is extracted from the what?
From the waste, I think, W-A-I-S-T. The complete, pure, so no bad scent of the tree of life, from the tree of life. I'm not sure exactly what that means. And I just wrote it down, and I may have left some words out. But we can come back to that later. I can go back and revisit that.
Maybe it's
you need to tell me where in the handout it is.
Chapter,
if we can find it.
Chapter 16.
Okay.
It was on chapter 16, I believe. I think I wrote that down, chapter 16.
You don't think
good
it has
is
to be
extracted from the waste. The waste, W-A-I-S-T, is the waste of the land. Because the land of Israel can be perceived as an hourglass. Because everything in life is a cycle. It goes down, and then you turn over the hourglass, it goes the other way. The waste is that midpoint where the sand flows through, using the hourglass as a metaphor. So good is extracted, meaning you don't get everything at once, you only get what you can handle. That's what good means in that context.
I thought
is that helpful to
the Tikkun HaNefesh chart with the sefirot that goes with the waist, you know, with the body part.
The sefirot that goes with the body part is the waist is really the belly. It's the center of the body. The body has a center. It has many centers, actually. But from an external standpoint, why do you have a umbilical cord? Why is it in the middle of the body? Why isn't it connected to your mouth? Why did he create it so that it would go in the body, in the middle? because everything needs to go through the center. Everything needs to connect to the central column.
Well, to bear it does. It is the central column, Jeffrey wrote. So,
exactly.
That's the body part that we touch when we do the Tikkun HaNefesh ritual. So.
Correct.
Okay. I think next.
Go ahead, Martha.
I think the next class I'd like to ask about Koach's sons that fell into the earth when Hashem opened it up, or Moses opened it up.
Right.
Through Hashem. And there's several levels of Sheol. And my question will be, the Koach's sons actually wrote a lot of the Psalms. Not a lot, but wrote some Psalms. And
yes.
My question will be, is there Teshuva in those levels of Sheol? I know the very last one, no, the, you know, bottom part. But can they do Teshuva? Because Koach's sons were in the earth. They were on a plate of some sort. I think I understand that. I'm not sure. But they came out of the earth. They came above the earth. They came out of the earth. I guess that's a better word.
No,
so that's my question.
They didn't come out of the earth. They didn't come out of the earth. They're at the mouth of Gehinnom. The earth opened up, and essentially that opening is the mouth of Gehinnom, the opening to Gehinnom. And they started down the slope. They were drawn into it. And as they were being drawn into it, their consciousness changed. And they did their teshuvah, and so they are frozen, singing the songs that they may have written beforehand. We don't know when they wrote the Psalms. It wasn't run, you know, when we get to those Psalms, we'll look and see what their words are and how they're saying it. But we don't really know how they're connecting to it. But they're not in Gehinnom, and they've done Teshuvah. And that's why in the temple on Monday, I know we sang a song from the sons of Korach. The Levites would sing that song. It's a joyous song. But it's connected to the idea of separation, which is what Korach is connected to. And as the sons of Korach, they honored their father by staying with their father, even though they knew they were going to die. And that consciousness was rewarded by them not dying, but living as the embodiment of that positive aspect of the negative energy.
So is there Shiva and at that point, if someone's falling into those different levels, is there a point where they can come back out of that, you know, through the consciousness, yes. God's mercy?
Yes. You don't, the only level of hell that you go to, the only level of Gehinnom that you don't come out of is named Sheol. It's the seventh level, the seventh hell.
Okay.
And you fall as far as you're supposed to fall. You fall as far as the Bet Din has sentenced you to. But it's not an unending forever penalty. You're given so much time. You're given so much process. And when that process is over, there will be a Sadiq who in his process, he goes down to the level of Gehinnom. And because he doesn't belong there, but he only goes down there to be able to elevate those people who are completed in their penalties. And he takes them up to the Garden of Eden with him, because there is no direct physical path, so to speak, a physical path. The only way you go from Gehinnom to heaven is through your consciousness applying. And only the tzaddikim are capable of doing that. The rasha'im, the people in getting cleansed in Gehinnom, they can't fly. So the only way out of Gehinnom is through the auspices of a particular tzaddik. And that's one of the reasons that we stress saying the names of the tzaddikim.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm going to bid shalom to all of you. Tomorrow
Thank
morning,
you,
hopefully I won't have the same problem again, and we'll be able to do our class tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. West Coast time. You're very welcome, Malka, too. All of you are welcome. I hope you enjoyed it. You have a good evening.
Thank you. Okay, good evening.
Thank you.
Shalom to all.
Shalom.